Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granthara Shima Bhagavatama ki, Vira Maharaj ki, Nitai Gopri Manan. So what we were discussing in last week's class. Everyone else? Chapter 5 is called Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj means Vasudev. So we hear about Krishna's appearance in Gokul, in Vrindavan, and how Krishna gives unlimited joy to the Brijvasis, and then how Nanda Maharaj then has to go to Mathura to pay the taxes to Kamsa, and how he meets Vasudev there. So tonight we'll begin chapter 6. What is chapter 6 called? Killing of the demon Putana. So this is the first of the demons who will be killed. Yes, someone's here. The first of the demons who will be killed in Krishna's Leela. So, Putana comes in the form of a witch, a Kechari. Kechari means a witch. Her name is Putana. So, each of the demons, they represent a particular obstacle in devotional service. So this is important to understand. Each demon represents a particular obstacle which needs to be removed or overcome in our devotional service. Now, as we go through the 10th canto, if you pray and if you study very sincerely, you can pray for these obstacles to be removed. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has pointed out in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita that each personality represents something in particular. Now, what does Putana represent? She's the first. Does anyone know what she represents? Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out in Shikshamrita. She represents the Sado Guru, or the false guru. This is important to understand. So Krishna's pastimes are divided into two categories. One is called Nainitika, the other one is called Nichalila. Well, what does Nichalila mean?
Eternal
pastimes. What is Nainitika?
Temporary material.
Occasional pastimes. Nainitika means the pastimes do not take place all the time. They just come, and sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not there. These pastimes only take place in the material world. Nimitika Lila. Nitya Lila means the eternal pastimes which Krishna performs in the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. In the material world, there are certain pastimes which take place which do not take place in Goloka Vrindavan. What are the examples? Yeah, Jamalila. Jamalila means, you could say childhood pastimes, yeah. Because Krishna is Nava Yovana in Goloka. Krishna is always 16. So in one sense you can say the childhood pastime, but specifically the Jamalila. There's no appearance pastime.
Kaishora.
Yeah, only Kaishora. Yeah, in the spiritual world. So there is no Jamalila. Jamalila means appearance pastime. What else is not there in the spiritual world? What else is Nimitika? Killing the demons, very good. Yeah, the demons are not killed. They do not appear in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, we only have the Abhiman. What does the Abhiman mean?
Love. Affection and love.
Yeah, well, actually means mental conception. Abhiman means like a thought. There is a thought there is a demon, but there is no actual demon there. In the spiritual world, they hear a rumor, Arishtasura is coming or Keshi is coming, but the demon does not exist and he does not appear. So there is the experience of the bhava, or the experience of the feeling that the demons are coming, which enhances the pastime, but they do not literally appear. So there are no demons, there's no birth pastime, and also there is no husbands of the gopis in the spiritual world. Radharani's so-called husband, his name is?
Abhimanyu.
So Abhiman means mental conception. So in the spiritual world, Abhimanyu and the other husbands, they are mentally conceived. It is like they are there, but they don't actually manifest. So they have a feeling that we are wedded to someone else, but that person is not actually there. So that there is no interface or no interaction between Radha and the other gopis and their so-called husbands. Whereas in the material world, the so-called husbands, they manifest. So you'll see there will be Abhimanyu will manifest, the demons will manifest, Krishna will appear and perform a Jamalila, an appearance pastime. In the spiritual world, these things do not take place. Therefore, they're called Naimittika. They're occasional. They only take place in the material world. So, in these pastimes, it explains that Poochana represents two things. The Sado Guru, or the false guru, and this can be the internal and the external manifestation. So I'll just read you what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains so that you can understand. So, Poochana represents the Sado Guru, and the Sado Guru may appear in two forms. Number one, a deceitful so-called guru who preaches sense gratification or liberation or both. In some cases, this may be a person who is engaged in some Krishna conscious activity but has not realized the course of pure devotional service and tries to give instructions to his disciples beyond his own understanding or without regard for their situations. That's not the internal, that's only the external. That's only the external. So the external means the guru who appears, and we see the world these days is full of false gurus. Gurus are there, but they're not teaching pure bhakti. It is devoid of pure bhakti. In other words, they're mixing it with other things, karma and jnana. So they're not actually qualified to be guru. So externally they dress as a guru, but internally they do not have the qualification. And in the case of Poochana, when Poochana comes to Gokul, she dresses beautifully, but internally she's completely evil. And Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur writes a nice article. Maybe I'll photocopy it for you, I'll give it out to you tomorrow. He writes a nice article and describes that the church leaders, you see what's happening now in the church? All these, the royal inquest into child sex abuse in the church. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, externally they dress like the guru, but internally they're doing things which even normal people would not do. Molesting children and doing the most abominable activities. So these are the false gurus. So anyone who acts like a guru externally but does not internally have the purity, they are the false gurus. So Poochana represents this. Yeah? Externally she looks perfect, but internally she's completely false. So that is the, there are two types of gurus. Now the external false guru and the internal false guru. Now the internal false guru, I'll read you this. This is from Bhakti Vinod Thakur. The inwardly manifest spiritual guide in the form of the mundane empiric reasoning faculty, the material mind, is also like Poochana. So the false guru externally can be the guru who dresses the guru like that, and internally it's your mind. Your mind is a false guru. Your mind says do this and do that, but your mind is completely contaminated by material desires. So if you take shelter of your mind, if your mind is not purified, because Krishna says in the Gita, if your mind is purified, it's your best friend. It takes you to Krishna. But if your mind is not purified, it contaminates you and leads you away from Krishna. So many people in this world, they take shelter of their mind as their guru. Whatever the mind says, they obey the mind. And the mind takes them to Patala Loka. How? Krishna says in the Gita, anger, lust, and greed are the three gateways to hell. So when your mind is not controlled, your mind is controlled by lust, anger, and greed, and it takes you to hell. So Putana represents these false gurus. One is internal, one is external. So we have to reject, these are obstacles. You have to reject these two things. These are obstacles. If you want to get back to Krishna, you have to reject listening to false gurus. It means your contaminated mind and anyone who dresses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur even says, even people in our sampradaya, they dress like gurus externally, but they do not realize pure devotional service. They have motivations. They want followers. They want people to follow them. They want profit, adoration, and distinction themselves. Therefore, they cannot give you Krishna purely, because they are not pure themselves. So therefore, you need a sadguru, a pure guru, a pure Vaishnava. It means it doesn't have to be a Paramahamsa like Prabhupada, but at least someone who is not motivated by material desires. So even false gurus, they come in ISKCON. They can, not that they necessarily are or will, but they can come even in ISKCON. So we have to be very careful. People may appear, and the Keshi demon, who will come much later on, we probably won't study Keshi this year, but next year. But the Keshi demon also represents a similar thing. Someone who comes into the society of devotees but just wants to cause trouble. So these Seder gurus, they come into the society of devotees, they want to enjoy all the facility, but actually their motivations are not pure. So you have to be very careful. And in Harinam Chintamani, Srila Haridas Thakur says, before you take initiation, you have to study your guru for at least 1 year. At least 1 year, you have to study the guru. You have to be convinced of the purity of the guru. And the guru has to study the disciple for at least 1 year. To see, can the disciple maintain the vows? Can they chant 16 rounds and follow the rituals? And are they sincere? Or is the disciple purely motivated? Or is the disciple have some other false motivation? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself had 60,000 disciples. And when he left this world, he said many of the followers, many of the disciples, were just taking initiation from him for distinction. Because they can say, oh, my guru is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is your guru? So he said many of them, they were not sincere. So he said when he left this world, he was disappointed. Prabhupada said when he left this world, he was not disappointed, because his disciples were sincere. Okay. Any questions so far about Putana? I'll photocopy this for you, so then you have access to some of this knowledge. And for those of you who missed the first 5 minutes of the class, you'll have to listen or make it up. I made some very important points before some of you walked in, so you'll have to catch up, because these are essential points. But I don't have time to repeat. That's why it's good if you come on time. Otherwise you miss out on the most important knowledge, which will take you back to the spiritual world. Now you don't have that knowledge, you have to stay here birth after birth. In Albert Park. Washing your dishes. What's that?
No, how you said that the husbands don't manifest in this spiritual world.
Yep.
So, what does that mean?
It means they're not there. It's just like Radharani, she thinks I'm married to Abhimanyu, I'm not married to Krishna, so I belong to someone else, but I'm in love with Krishna. So it creates parakeya bhav. But the husband is not there. You never see him. Just a mental conception. Do you find that hard to understand?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do I. So when you go back to the spiritual world, it makes sense.
Because I read that,
Hare Baba. When you get back to the spiritual world, it will make sense. You understand? Huh?
Yeah, just say.
Okay, we'll buy you a ticket. When your guest becomes rich, he'll buy you a ticket. Alright? Maybe not in this lifetime. Oh no, oh Krishna. Oh, that's it's very hard to understand. Oh no. But don't try to understand it. Some things you cannot understand. So don't try to understand it, because you won't be able to understand it. It's not possible.
Maybe the Kopika is the influence of your mind. That's what you understand, like the image that they are husband. But they
Shukadeva Goswami continued. My dear King, while Nanda Maharaj was on the way home, he considered that what Vasudeva had said could not be false or useless. There must have been some danger or disturbances in Gokul. As Nanda Maharaj thought about the danger for his beautiful son Krishna, he was afraid and he took shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller. Would have abundant.
Whenever there is danger, the pure devotee thinks of protection and support. This is also advised in the Bhagavad Gita 9.3. Anitya Masukam Lokam, Na Prapya Vajasvam. In this material world, there is danger at every step. Adam Varam, Yavipadam. Therefore, a devotee has no other course than to take shelter of the Lord at every step.
Good. So, what are the points there?
Krishna is the only protection.
Yeah, it's natural. Whenever we're in danger, we call out to Krishna. That's natural. Right? The Brijbasis do it. Whenever they're in danger, you read later in the Bhagavad Gita, they say, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, mighty arm Krishna, come and save us. When the forest fire comes, you'll see later on, there's forest fire, and when all the demons come, they call out to Krishna. So it's natural they take shelter. So it's a natural inclination of the soul. When you're in danger, you take shelter of Krishna. At least you should. If you take shelter of something else, that is foolish, that is ignorance. So we should not only take shelter of Krishna when everything is difficult. Quite often that's what we do. Quite often, we only take shelter of Krishna when everything is very difficult. But when everything is easy, then what do you do? Sometimes we forget Krishna. Sometimes when everything's going well, then we're not so dependent. That's why Queen Kunti says, when everything is difficult, it is easier to take shelter of Krishna. It is natural. You're forced to. When everything is going smoothly, you're not forced to take shelter of Krishna. And because many of us are neophyte devotees, we don't take shelter of Krishna when everything is going easy. That's why Krishna perpetually puts you into difficulty. Because then you call out to Krishna. So that is the situation. So it's natural for a devotee. Whenever something is difficult, he takes shelter of Krishna. So Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj, these eternal associates, when everything's new, they begin to take shelter of Krishna. So in this situation, actually, Nanda Maharaj is calling out to Lord Narayan, because he sees Krishna as his son. So he calls out to Narayan. But then you'll see when Govardhan Leela is taking place, they call out to Krishna directly. Because they have that sense, he's so powerful. You'll see in this pastime, because he destroys, or he overcomes Putana. And you see how powerful Putana is, and Krishna is not, he is not put into difficulty by Putana. So they get faith in Krishna that he is unlimitedly powerful, because all of these demons are easily destroyed by him.
I thought that is the Narayan who has saved him.
Yeah, that's what they think.
They don't think that Krishna is big.
Yes.
In our Brijbasis, they don't think Krishna is God.
On one level, they think he is the Supreme Personality, but on many other levels, they think he's just a village member.
Because he's my memory was, I always read that, you know, they always used to think that they did the prayer of Narayan to this, Narayan said to them.
Yeah. And sometimes in the past times they call out to Krishna directly. Okay. Oh, that's... but they don't exactly see him as God. But they know that he's all powerful. So it's they know he's God, but they don't really care.
Even when they elected the Govardhan, they thought it was their umbrella which lifted the Govardhan. Not Krishna.
Yeah, they say that, but they know it's him because he's holding it. Yeah, but they also think. They all think, oh, I'm holding Govardhan Hill, and then Krishna brings Govardhan Hill down, and they realize they're not holding Govardhan Hill. While Nanda Maharaj was returning to Gokul, the same fierce Putana, whom Kamsa had previously engaged to kill babies, was wandering about in the towns, cities, and villages, doing her nefarious duty. My dear king, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, there cannot be any danger from bad elements. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokul while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. Jamuna Jiva,
Sukadeva Goswami spoke these words to mitigate the anxiety of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee of Krishna, and therefore when he understood that Putana was causing disturbances in Gokula, he was somewhat perturbed. Sukadeva Goswami therefore assured him that there was no danger in Gokula. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung Namashraya Kari Yathane Tumi Takane Apane Khaje. Everyone is thus advised to seek shelter in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and remain engaged in his own occupational duty. There is no loss in this, and the gain is tremendous. Even from a material point of view, everyone should take to chanting the Hare Krishna mantra to be saved from all kinds of danger. This world is full of danger. Padam padam yad vipadam. Therefore, we should be encouraged to chant Hare Krishna Maha mantra so that in our family, society, neighborhood, and nation, everything will be smooth and free from danger.
Any points there?
Because Krishna has put all this days in his name. So, in this Kali Yuga, we should take this out of his name.
Any other points?
In Prabhupada Lilamrita, we read one time, Prabhupada says, when I have some problem, like some health problem or something, and don't take me to hospital or anywhere, but you chant and I also chant.
Yeah, that's good. Anything else?
The nature of a devotee is exhibited here. The nature of a devotee is to naturally think on about Krishna and his welfare rather than getting something from Krishna. So when the two places we could see, one there was one where Nanda Maharaj thinks about Krishna, he takes shelter, that shows the Vatsalya Bhav, and here in the verse 3, the devotee as Parikshit Maharaj here, when he thinks about Gokul being, Putana coming into Gokul, so he is kind of agitated. So that's again the nature of a devotee. Whenever he thinks about Krishna, and he naturally gets that spontaneous affection or reaction, basically.
Yeah, nice point.
See that in Kulashekara verse, Maharaj Kulashekara, whenever he needs to hear the Ramayana and he needs to hear that there is a war going to take place, he needs to actually take his old army and go to fight the war. And he was listening to Ramayana thousands of years ago. And then they have to actually arrange for another army to come and say that we have killed Ramayana, has killed Ramayana, and he needs to be able to go to the war.
So, the basic point is there is no need for anxiety in Krishna's association. Hands up if you ever get an anxiety. So what does that mean? It means we lack faith in Krishna. Because if you lack faith in Krishna, you won't have anxiety. I've been practicing this for many years, and it's still, I can't fully grasp this point. Sometimes I get an anxiety about things. I think, oh, I have to do this or that or that. But actually, if I had full faith in Krishna, there would not be any anxiety. I know that Krishna will take care of everything. But sometimes we do get in anxiety. That's because we lack faith in Krishna. If our faith is absolute, there is no anxiety. So Ananda Maharaj, he's having anxieties. He's going into Gokul. But that anxiety is for Krishna himself. He's anxious that Krishna will be harmed. So that is different to our anxiety. Our anxiety quite often is just about us. It's about our own material desires not being fulfilled. Then we become anxious. So, whenever you are with Krishna, there is no anxiety. Now, where is Krishna manifest at this point in time?
In the Bhagavatam.
In the Bhagavatam, yeah. In the holy name. Yeah, specifically saying here in the holy name. Prabhupada says in the songbook of the Vaishnavacharyas, he said the safest place in the material world is in kirtan ras. When you're absorbed in kirtan, Prabhupada said that is the safest place in this material world. Then there is no anxiety. You know what it's like when you're in kirtan? There's no anxiety. When you're actually absorbed in chanting the holy name. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that there will be peace all over the world, Prabhupada says. In our family, hands up if your family is peaceful. Okay. Society, hands up if your society is peaceful. Okay. Your neighborhood, no? And your nation, right? So how does it become peaceful? How does your family become peaceful? Your society, your neighborhood, and your nation. When the people within the family or the society or the nation are chanting properly. Right? Wherever the holy name is, everything becomes peaceful and becomes auspicious. But the problem is, we are not chanting properly. That's the defect. Now, if everyone in the family chants properly, then they will treat each other properly. Why are we not treating each other properly? We're not on the spiritual platform. Why are you not on the spiritual platform? Because you don't chant your rounds properly. Devotees don't chant properly. And you see, because of this improper chanting and not elevating yourself properly to the spiritual platform, then you see things with material vision. And you view others in your life with material vision. But when you're on the spiritual platform, you see them as spiritual living entities. Now, I was reading, there's one very nice article by he was a British man. He was living in Vrindavan, Mathura, in the 1700s. And at that time, he got to know everyone in Vrindavan and all the leaders of the different temples in Vrindavan. And he said that they were not, he's writing this over 200 years ago, and he said no one was getting along back then. And even to this day, still similar things are taking place. And even in ISKCON, sometimes you see these things are taking place. I've heard about temples in India where disciples in the temple are initiated by two principal gurus. It'd be one camp and another camp. Mainly like that. And the devotees don't get along very well. There's like tension, even in ISKCON. Now, why is this? This is because the devotees are not chanting properly. Because when you chant properly, you'll be on the spiritual platform. You respect everyone properly. You respect everyone's guru properly. Sometimes devotees don't respect the other gurus. They respect their guru, but not the other gurus properly. Why is that? Because they're not chanting properly. So this is the main problem in spiritual life, actually. Devotees do not chant properly. Because when you chant properly, it resolves problems because you're in the correct state of consciousness. You get onto the Brahma-Buddha platform. Brahma-Buddha, Prasanatma, Nasochiti, Nakankshiti. There are no problems when you're on the proper platform. But when you're not on the proper platform, there will be so many problems. So the problem is devotees do not chant properly. So it says here, when you chant properly, you will feel Krishna's presence, and when there's Krishna's presence, there is no anxiety, and there's no bodily concept of life. You just fall asleep in class because you don't chant properly. If you had a taste for the holy name, you could not fall asleep. Actually, because we lack taste for the holy name, or nama ruchi, or taste for the holy name, that's why you have problems in every aspect of your devotional service. You only fall asleep in class because you have no taste for the holy name. Because Prabhupada said, when you have a taste for hearing and chanting, you'll listen with rapt attention. So all the problems are coming from our lack of taste in chanting. It's a very simple process. Lord Chaitanya says, Dudaivam idrisham ihajani nanu ragaha. What does raga mean? Attachment. Rag. Rag means attachment. Rag anuga. Bhakti rag. Rag means attachment. Nanu raga. No attachment. Why do we have no attachment? Dudaivam. Because we are unfortunate. And what is our misfortune? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we commit offenses while chanting. Therefore, no taste. No taste means you're on the material platform, you see other people materially, and you argue. Husband and wife argue. I know what happens in your house. Because it happens in my house as well. I have realization and knowledge. But actually, my wife and I, we don't argue very much. We do argue sometimes. Sometimes there's stupid things, most ridiculous things that you argue about. But it's only because you're lacking taste in chanting the holy name. Because when you don't, you'll be on the spiritual platform. Yeah. Any other points?
Prabhupada, I can't understand why the spiritual masters were initiating the disciples in this separate camp.
No, it just means, like in this temple, there are many gurus.
Yeah.
So some temples, there are two gurus which are the main gurus.
Yeah.
And then the disciples don't get along because they think, oh, my guru is better than your guru. That's material consciousness.
But why are they initiated by both the gurus in one place?
They can, but they see each other materially.
So is it the disciples or the spiritual master? The
disciples.
But why the spiritual master is the one who initiates?
Okay.
So why would they
initiate? I'm confused. Let's just keep it simple.
Because when I was there in Vrindavan, our Guru Maharaj initiated, and there was another group. They initiated in the same temples.
Yeah, but that's not the point I'm making. Different point. That's okay. But when the disciples do not get along, that's not okay. Okay? Yeah, it's good in Melbourne. In Melbourne, the devotees are quite mature, so they tend to respect each other's gurus. The problem I sometimes see is that the God brothers and God sisters of the same guru don't treat each other properly. Sometimes I see that. When the guru comes, everyone starts fighting over service. Now, in the spiritual world, Prabhupada explains, everyone pushes everyone else forward to do the service. But then sometimes I hear and I see that when the guru comes, the God brothers and God sisters are fighting. That's material consciousness. Because if you're actually advanced, you'd push the other devotee forward. You say, you do the service and I'll assist you. Because you're neophyte, then you think. Well, you see, sometimes devotees, you know, when the Abhishek is on in the temple, right, and devotees come in late, and they walk over everyone else so they can sit right in front of the deity just so they can see the deity. What is that called? Kanishta Adhikari. That's material. And I won't name anyone because I don't want to embarrass people, but it's neophyte consciousness. Because a really advanced devotee who put the other devotees forward, he'll be satisfied sitting at the back. Do you think because you're further away from Krishna, that means you're less intimate with Krishna? Do you have to be next to Krishna to be close to him? No. Do you have to be next to the guru to be close to him? No. That's material consciousness. But I see devotees walk all the way in, step on everyone else so they can be at the front. And they're Kanishta Adhikari. Okay. Once upon a time, Putana Rakshashi, who could move according to her desire and was wandering in outer space, converted herself by mystic power into a very beautiful woman and thus entered Gokul, the abode of Nanda Maharaj. So the Acharyas describe that when she first entered into Vrindavan, she came in the form of an owl. She flew in as an owl. It doesn't mention the Bhagavatam, you know, an owl? A bird. Night bird. Owl. What's the name in? Is that the word?
Yeah,
I like that. So she, what's it called?
Uluga.
Ulu. Yeah, so she came in as Ulu. She flew in. Like that, as Ulu. Means foolish. Foolish owl. So she came in as Ulu, right, and then she manifested as? Very beautiful woman. So she came in and she can change her form according to her desire. Very powerful. So then she changed into a very beautiful woman, and then as she walked in to Vrindavan, everyone was amazed. Who is she? She was captivating. Right? And as she walked in, and they said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I am the wife of a Brahmana from Mathura. And I have come to give blessings to Nandalal." And everyone said, "Oh, she's so powerful. She was like effulgent." So everyone was captivated. Everyone said, "Just go, just go." And she's a Brahmana. So Brahmanas can go anywhere they want. There is no jurisdiction. Brahmanas can enter. So she walked all the way into Nanda Maharaj's palace, all the way into Krishna's bedroom. And normally you won't let just anyone walk into your house to where your children are. But she went all the way in. And she got all the way to Krishna himself. And no one protested because she was so... But the Acharyas and the Bhagavatam says it's just like a sword that's in a beautiful case. So the case looks very beautiful, but when you pull out, it's a sword. And so it was evil. Inside was evil. Like a Sado guru. Some of these gurus, they are externally, they look like a very respectable person, but inside the heart, they want to take you away from Krishna. The guru is meant to bring you closer to Krishna. Some gurus actually bring you away. They're Mayavadis, they look very nice. But then they said, no, Krishna is false. And everyone listens to them. So they look very nice, but then they, everything is poisonous within. Same as Putana.
What?
Yeah, in English it's a word called Sado or Shudo. It means false or means partial.
And what do you call it
in Sanskrit? In Sanskrit? I don't know.
Sorry?
No, try sorry. Yeah, that's one word you can use. Like shadow. Yeah. Different words you can use. Yeah. Her hips were full, her breasts were large and firm, seeming to overburden her slim waist, and she was dressed very nicely. Her hair, adorned with a garland of Malika flowers, was scattered about her beautiful face. Her earrings were brilliant, and, as she smiled very attractively, glancing upon everyone, her beauty drew the attention of all the inhabitants of Braj, especially the men. When the gopis saw her, they thought that the beautiful goddess of fortune, holding a lotus flower in her hand, had come to see her husband, Krishna. While searching for small children, Putana, whose business was to kill them, entered the house of Nanda Maharaj, unobstructed, having been sent by the superior potency of the Lord. Without asking anyone's permission, she entered Nanda Maharaj's room, where she saw the child sleeping in bed. His unlimited power, covered like a powerful fire covered by ashes. She could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading super soul, lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. So the Acharyas mentioned there are a number of reasons why Krishna closed his eyes at this time. Does anyone know the reasons? What are the reasons?
Because the king of woman, it's inauspicious.
That's one reason. Yeah, to kill a woman's inauspicious. So that's one reason. What else?
It is said that God never closes his eyes, and also it is said that God closes his eyes. He closes his eyes when his devotees make the mistakes, so he oversees the mistakes they make. And he's always opening, his eyes are always wide open to see whatever the smallest thing devotional service that devotees are doing.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. So I'll give you Jiva Goswami's reasons. There are different, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives reasons, Prabhupada gives reasons. So I won't give all the reasons right now. Maybe tomorrow I'll give you more. But I'll just give you what Jiva Goswami has said. First of all, Krishna closes his eyes because he wanted to demonstrate his extreme childishness and fearfulness. So he's so powerful. It's like, if someone attacks you, you're so powerful, you just close your eyes. Or like a whole army is running at you, and you just close your eyes. Because you're so powerful, it doesn't matter. So even though she's such a powerful demon, Krishna just closes his eyes. Because for him, there's no fear whatsoever. So he's showing his supremacy. That's one reason. Secondly, he wanted to avoid looking at such a wicked being. Because she was so evil, Krishna didn't even want to look at her. He actually looks at her, it says. He looks at her first of all, but when he looks at her curiously. Because he's thinking in his own mind, Krishna thinks, I just want to do good for you. Like Krishna wants to do good for everyone. But you're coming to me and you're so evil. And you want to kill babies. So Krishna, it's like he's a little confused. So he closes his eyes. He's like, I want to reciprocate with you. You're coming as a mother, and you want to kill me. So I'll just close my eyes. And Krishna's not going to look at her directly. That's another reason. Third reason, he wanted to avoid her fiendish, hypnotizing glance. Because she's a Rakshasi, and she's a witch. So they can look at you and they can control you by their glance. I've read, there are books where Western people go to India and they see one Shiva Baba, one sadhu, who worships Shiva, and then he looks at them and they become sick just by the glance. So the glance, if someone's very potent, just they look at you, they can make you, they can bring auspiciousness or inauspiciousness. I've experienced that myself, that advanced devotees in ISKCON have looked at me on several occasions and things have taken off in my spiritual life. I've also noticed where advanced devotees have looked at me in a displeasing way because they're not happy with me and things have become very difficult. So just a glance of a great soul can change things very drastically. Krishna doesn't want to look at her because she has this glance. Krishna cannot be affected, but he's just closing his eyes. And the fourth reason, to hide his visible shame and confusion at having to kill someone who was coming to him in the role of a mother, even though killing was necessary to benefit her. This is because he has an ocean of good qualities. So he's about to kill her, so he doesn't want to look her in the face. Because Krishna is very soft. If you're going to kill someone, normally you'll look at them and you'll kill them. But Krishna's very soft. He's like, okay, I'll kill her, but I don't want to. He doesn't want to get into that mentality. So that's Jiva Goswami. Maybe tomorrow I'll give you Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, and Prabhupada also gives a few extra reasons as well.
I heard when Vamadeva appeared in Vrindavan University, and actually she really appreciated him very much.
Yeah.
And
we'll discuss that tomorrow night. Who was Pujana in her previous life? Some say it was sister and some say it was daughter. And if you want to find out which one it is, you have to come tomorrow night. Actually, it says both. But if you want to find out, then tomorrow. We'll go into that tomorrow. Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus she resembled a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Yashoda and Rohini, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother. So Prabhupada points out the purport, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that they were affected by Yoga Maya. It's not Maha Maya. But Yoga Maya caused them to see her differently to what she was. Because she came in and they let her go immediately to the child. So they're pure devotees. They're Lord's eternal associates. But Krishna wanted to have a pastime. So he covered them with yoga maya, so they thought that she was motherly and then allowed. So Krishna is just performing a pastime here. So even his eternal associates, he covers them with yoga maya sometimes. Just like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. That was a yoga maya, not maha maya. On that very spot, the fiercely dangerous Rakshasi took Krishna on her lap and pushed her breast into his mouth. The nipple of her breast was smeared with a dangerous, immediately effective poison. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, becoming very angry at her, took hold of her breast, squeezed it very hard with both hands, and sucked out both the poison and her life. So here it says that Krishna sucked the life out of her body. But the Acharyas point out it actually wasn't Krishna. It was Krishna's potency called Samhara Shakti. Samhara Shakti means his potency of destruction. When Krishna wants to destroy you, usually he won't even do it himself. He just sends his energy. So he wants to kill her, so he uses his shakti. And his shakti pulls the life out. Krishna himself doesn't personally do it, because Krishna is very soft. And actually it describes, all of these demons get killed, it is not Krishna, the original form, doing it, it is the Vasudeva expansion. The incarnations of Krishna, or his expansions who are within himself, they come out and they perform these pastimes. Or even his shaktis will do it. Because Krishna is very soft. He doesn't kill demons, actually. In the original form, he doesn't kill demons. He just likes to enjoy and be very soft. But when he has to be strong, then he sends his expansions or his shaktis to do the work. So we see that he pulls out her life, and effectively he pulls out her demoniac tendency. Because you see that Lord Chaitanya doesn't kill the demons, but he kills the demoniac spirit. So what he does, he chastises her and he changes her demoniac mentality. And then he sends her, we read later in the chapter, he sends her to Vaikuntha. So Krishna wants us all to go back to Godhead, but for us to go back to Godhead, what has to happen? We have to give up our demoniac tendency. Hands up if you have a demoniac tendency. If you suffer from lust, anger, greed, you can only have one, you can't have two. Yeah, that's too enthusiastic. So you can only lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, envy. If you have any of these qualities in your heart, which all of us do, that is demoniac tendency. So Krishna has to remove that before we can go back to him. So he deals with you in such a way to remove that demoniac tendency. Because Poochana, he wants to bring her back to Vaikuntha. At the end of this chapter, she goes to Vaikuntha. But first he has to take out the demoniac spirit. So how does Krishna take out the demoniac spirit? By chastising. Does Krishna ever chastise you? Yeah, some days he does. Very heavily. Because he's cutting that demoniac spirit from our consciousness. So Krishna makes arrangements so all that would be purified. Right? And if you can't purify it yourself, Krishna won't do it for you. Myself, I know I can't get rid of certain attachments or desires or states of material consciousness. So I just pray to Krishna, Krishna, please remove them. Not too hard, but please. That's how I pray. It doesn't always work like that, but I pray like that. What do you pray? Yeah, that's all we can do.
I just wanted to know, is for the Sankhari Sakti, which Sakti, a demonic spirit, was Lord?
It's the Lord's potency.
So both Sakti, the demonic tendency.
Yeah. Unbearably pressed in every vital point, the demon Poochana began to cry, "Please leave me, suck my breast no longer." Perspiring, her eyes wide open and her arms and legs flailing, she cried very loudly again and again. So while she's throwing her arms and legs around, Krishna's a baby, he has her by the breast and he's sucking her breath, he's pulling the life out, and with his little legs he's kicking her. And his legs feel like thunderbolts. So, you know, she's trying to get away. He's holding her and he's just kicking her like this. So why does Krishna do this? Because if you're a demon, he kicks you. And if you have demoniac tendency in your heart, he will kick it out. Krishna's a heavy person. Don't mess with him. And we do it all the time. You know, we try to do our demoniac things and our material consciousness, but Krishna, when he's ready, he just comes in, he's like, bang. Sometimes he does it to me. He just comes in, he just hits so hard. And sometimes I think, why did you have to hit that hard? Why don't you hit me that hard? It's like that. But that's what he's like. If he doesn't want something there, just pull in. That's his mercy. So sooner or later, we have to thank Krishna. I'm not quite that advanced yet. When he hits me really hard, I say, thank you, but you know, maybe softer next time. But he just does whatever he wants, because that's...
It's not his fault, it's our fault. To do the wrong thing.
Yeah, it's helpful. Yeah, you just have to accept it. I'm just not that advanced yet.
Well, I'm not advanced yet.
As Poochana screamed loudly and forcefully, the earth with its mountains and outer space with its planets trembled. The lower planets in all directions vibrated, and people fell down, fearing that thunderbolts were falling upon them. So we have to understand how powerful these demons were. Sometimes we read Krishna book, or we've heard this pastime many times. Yeah, we've heard this hundreds of times, this pastime. But the reason we don't really surrender to Krishna, we don't understand how powerful Krishna is. Because you don't understand how powerful these demons are. You really have to meditate on this. Like, we think, oh, you know, Krishna killed the demon. These demons were so powerful that when he killed them, the whole universe was shaking. The earth was shaking. When Putana hit the ground, that's how powerful she could be. Made the earth shake. You hear later on, when Dantavaka and these people walked, the earth would tremble every time they walked. Felt like there was an earthquake. That's how powerful they were. And Krishna easily defeated all of them. That shows how powerful he is. So it puts things into perspective. You have to analyze these things very carefully. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Parikshit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form as a Rakshasi, as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. O King Parikshit, when the gigantic body of Putana fell to the ground, it smashed all the trees within a limit of 12 miles. Appearing in a gigantic body, she was certainly extraordinary. So it says when she fell down, she smashed all the trees. Krishna was inside Nandamaharaja's palace in Gokul. And when she started wrestling and everything, and she was about to change into the witch, because she was very beautiful, now she was about to change and expand herself, he threw her outside. He took her outside and kind of pushed her outside. So you're not going to smash the palace apart, I'll take you outside. And the place he took her, and then when she expanded and smashed everything, all the trees got smashed. That was Kamsa's mango grove. So Krishna smashed all these mangroves. Just as a warning, I'm coming to get you later on. First, I'll smash all your mangoes just to make your life miserable. So Krishna was showing Kamsa from the very beginning. If you want to send witches into Vrindavan, I'll smash it. The Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Her nostrils were deep like mountain caves, and her breasts resembled big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like deep, blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the banks of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like big bridges, and her abdomen appeared like a dried-up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the cowherd men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming. And when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they were even more frightened. So he's doing all this as a baby, just to show everyone how powerful he is. And he's just a baby. I mean, he's literally like, you know, this big. And he's destroying this demon who is immeasurably powerful.
Was it a mango grove?
Yeah. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing. Did I read that already?
No.
Where else? We're up to 18?
18.
Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Thereafter, Mother Yashoda and Rohini, along with the other elderly gopis, waved about the switch of a cow to give full protection to the child, Sri Krishna. So Prabhupada gives a very nice purport about cow protection. They use the tail of the cow. Sometimes the cow has very long hair, so you can cut that hair, and then it makes like a long, like that, and you use that. Sometimes when they do the deity worship, they use that. When they like flick the powder, they use it for different things than deity. So Prabhupada's saying anything from the cow is auspicious. They bathe Krishna in urine from the cow. Right? They put tilak on with cow dung on his body to protect him. Because anything to do with the cow is auspicious. Just like I was at the farm a couple of days ago, and Humsi, one of our cows, she started urinating. So I tried to get... close so I could take the urine and purify myself, but I couldn't get there in time. And therefore my life is inauspicious. Because if you can get the cow urine, it's pavitra, it's purified. It's very powerful.
In India, all children are taught to do that, because in India you see so many cows roaming around on the streets. I remember my mom used to always teach that the cow and she used to teach us, you should take it and bring it.
Yeah. Yeah, the Western people. That's why people are not joining the Hare Krishna movement. Because we are the cow wee drinkers. Cow wee drinkers key? They can drink beer, and we will drink cow wee. The child was thoroughly washed with cow urine and then smeared with the dust raised from the movements of the cows. Then different names of the Lord were applied with cow dung on 12 different parts of the body, beginning with the forehead, as done in applying tilak. In this way, the child was given protection. So tilak goes on 12 different parts of the body. Now I want everyone here to be honest right now. Hands up if you've got tilak on one part of your body or 12 parts. Hands up if you've done all 12. Hands up if you did one. Yeah, that's lazy. Do like that. Just like that. That's not the system. You have to do 12 parts. Right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Right? 12 parts. Like that. Because that protects you. Right? The tilak is auspicious. You can make tilak from cow dung. But this is Gopi Chandan. It's earth from Dwarka. That what we put on. From a holy place. It says even the dirt, the soil from underneath Tulsi tree, you can use that for tilak. There's many different types of things you can use for tilak. It's all spirit and it protects you and it purifies your consciousness. So it says here three things, right? Anything from the cow, the sacred tilak, and the holy name. Because when you put it on, you say Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayana Narya Namaha, Amadavaya Namaha. Like that. So this is what purifies you, the holy name. And the spiritual substance. Okay. So don't take shortcuts in spiritual life. 12 places.
I say only Om, I know, and I say, but you added one more word. Om Advaya
Namaha.
Okay. But you said
something. Same as you. I always do everything you do. The gopis first executed the process of archaman, drinking a sip of water from the right hand. They purified their bodies and hands with the Niyasa mantra and then applied the same mantra upon the body of the child. So they did purification. You have to do this. When you do deity worship, you have to purify. Om Keshavaya Namaha. Okay, archaman. You have to do archaman. All these things we do purify the consciousness. When you do archaman, you have to chant the mantra into the water. That's what makes the water pure and sacred. Water is already pure and sacred, but when you chant the mantra in there, and then you drink it, it purifies the consciousness. Right? So we follow all these things because it purifies us. Right? Keeps us protected. Shukadev Goswami informed Maharaj Pariksit that the gopis, following the proper system, protected Krishna, their child, with this mantra. May Aja protect your legs. May Maniman protect your knees. Yagya, your thighs. Achucha, the upper part of your waist. And Hayagriva, your abdomen. May Keshava protect your heart. Isha, your chest. The sun god, your neck. Vishnu, your arms. Urukrama, your face. And Ishwara, your head. May Chakri protect you from the front. May Sri Hari, Gadadari, the carrier of the club, protect you from the back. And may the carrier of the bow, who is known as the enemy of Madhu, the Lord Arjuna, the carrier of the sword, protect you, protect your two sides. May Lord Urugaya, the carrier of the conch shell, protect you from all corners. May Upendra protect you from above. May Garuda protect you on the ground. And may Lord Haladara, the Supreme Person, protect you on all sides. May Hrishikesh protect you, protect your senses, and Narayan, your life air. May the master of Shweta Dweep protect the core of your heart, and may Lord Yogeshwara protect your mind. May Lord Prishnigava protect your intelligence and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, your soul. While you are playing, may Govinda protect you, and while you are sleeping, may Madhava protect you. May Lord Vaikuntha protect you while you are walking, and may Lord Narayan, the husband of the goddess of fortune, protect you while you are sitting. Similarly, may Lord Yajnabhug, the fearful enemy of all evil planets, always protect you while you enjoy life. The evil witches known as Dakinis, Yatudanis, and Kushmandas are the greatest enemies of children. And the evil spirits like Bhutas, Pretas, Pishachas, Yakshas, Rakshashas, and Vinayakas, as well as witches like Kotara, Revati, Jaista, Putana, Matrika, are always ready to give trouble to the body, the life air, and the senses, causing loss of memory, madness, and bad dreams. Like the most experienced evil stars, they all create great disturbances, especially for children, but one can vanquish them simply by uttering Lord Vishnu's name. For when Lord Vishnu's name resounds, all of them become afraid and go away. Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, all the gopis, headed by Mother Yashoda, were bound by material affection. After they thus chanted mantras to protect the child, Mother Yashoda gave the child the nipple of her breast to suck and then got him to lie down on his bed. Srila Prabhupada ki.